Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, my first guest has just published her latest novel. It's her fourth one, actually. It's called The Inheritance, and tells the story of a young man who returns to the beautiful Bear Peninsula in the 1980s. Kaveri Madhavan joins me this morning. Good morning.
Hi, Brennan. It's absolutely great to be on your show.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm just filling in, but thanks for saying that. How are you? I'm in the middle of it, so try not to spoil it on me. I'm loving it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I must get you to sign it. It's one I'm reading and I'm really enjoying
Delighted.
Yeah,
now.
Thank you so much. How did you end up setting the story on the Bear Peninsula in the 1980s as well?
Yeah, I think the 1980s bit is just, you know, some writers, and I'm definitely one of them, don't like to write in a time of mobile phones.
I love that.
So, yeah, it's you know,
because I did notice that.
Yeah, it skews
the pay
story.
Phone and everything.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it takes the mystery out of what's happening to your characters if everybody could just pick up a phone and figure out, you know.
Oh, nice.
So, but Bera itself, you know, the idea for the story, I got about 20 years ago, and I've been stewing on it for a while. It was just something I overheard at a kitchen table.
Really?
About a child on a bus, you know, who was sort of going up and down to Cork just for respite for the family. And I don't know anything about the child and who the child was. And it just, you know, that story just stayed with me. And I was actually quite taken with the whole compassion in that arrangement.
And we'll jump to that in a minute, but just to clear that up for the listeners, so there is an element in the story. There's a child who is neurodiverse and just takes the bus from the town and back every day to give the family respite, and there's an arrangement with the driver. I mean, it's a beautiful part of the story, but it's not the key part of the story, but it's important. But it's your fourth novel, The Inheritance, and your first novel was Paddy Indian, somewhat inspired by your own experience moving to Ireland in the 80s.
Yes. Absolutely.
So tell me about that.
So, we came to Ireland in 1986.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
I remember it.
Yeah. God. It was kind of a desperate time.
It
in
was.
Ireland, you know.
Yeah.
I was so depressed. And we came straight from India to Sligo. And, you know, it was an absolutely wonderful time in our lives. You know, we were coming from a huge, massive, big urban city, you know, massive, big city of 12 million. And we arrived in Sligo. Which
you say we, so your husband
came with my husband. And, you know, to come from such a huge city and then to come to Sligo, it was a massive change, but we absolutely loved it. You know, we went from being city dwellers to absolutely not wanting to.
You said
to
the city
ever...
came from Madras, yeah.
Yeah, Madras.
Wow.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's a population of 8 million people?
Yeah, yeah.
And next was you're in Sligo, it has 8,000 in the town you're
in.
Yeah. Like, what was that like?
It was weird and wonderful, is what I'd say, you know. it was. You know, we were literally, you stepped out of your door. We stepped out of our door. We could see Ben Bulbin. It was just
beautiful.
The most beautiful,
it's beautiful
part of the country. It was a wonderful introduction.
I have a really good friend,
Ireland.
Trish, who lives there. And we go down, we've been down a couple of times. It's just a beautiful part of the world. Mm. Really is. And she texted me last night saying I'd mentioned Sligo. So I mentioned it again. There you, Trish. Take me back. How did you meet your husband?
So I met him, you know, we were childhood sweethearts. We met when we were 15 and a half. And we were both members in the same rowing club.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how we met.
You were used to moving a lot, so you were kind of like, and I love that, and I said that in the intro, that trains and platforms are a big part that inspired you to be a writer. So let's even go back further to your father and moving around in India. Tell us about your childhood.
So Brendan, my dad was in the army, you know, and as in most Indian army regiments, the regiments move literally, you know, every year, sometimes every 2 years, at very short notice as well. So, you know, my whole childhood, I went to 13 schools.
Did you?
Yeah, because we moved so many times. And the whole thing of, you know, moving was, you know, you went on these long train journeys, which could take, you know, sometimes 3 days, sometimes even 5 days in those days. And a huge part of that train journey was every time that we stopped somewhere long enough, we'd sort of run to look at where the railway bookstalls would be. And there were a couple of really well-known ones which are still there in India in railway stations, the Wheelers, you know, and there's another one called Higginbotham's. And it was such a treat. We bought books and comics, and my mother would buy magazines, and, you know, we would spend the journey reading and, enjoying books.
And so. I read a gorgeous quote that you wrote in an interview saying that you'd pull into one station and you'd leave with a book and a whole new world in front of you would unfold. So you used your imagination very much so, even at that early age.
Yeah, I think we, you know, it's hard to imagine a time without phones and without television.
It is, isn't it? But I remember it.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, we were kind of, we were brought up on radio and books. And that was it, you know, radio and books. And outside that was just sport and school.
Yeah, I have the incredible memories from those trips to the New Garrison. We went on trains. Moving constantly meant friendships were short-lived. Books, on the other hand, were more reliable companions. That's so sweet, isn't it?
What could be described as
childhood trauma, you just take all the good from it.
Yeah, and I think it wasn't traumatic because it was the only thing we knew.
Yeah.
Do you know, like if I'd stayed 10 years in one place and then suddenly have to move, then I suppose there would be a bit of anxiety. But we just didn't know anything different, my brother and I. We just didn't know anything different, you know. So.
And tell me the story about your brother, please, if you don't mind.
Yeah, my brother, unfortunately, you know, he died when he was 19.
Wow.
And he was my only sibling. And it was very sad.
It must have had obviously a massive impact on your parents and your family.
It did, you know. I mean, he was really a golden child in that, you know, he was very handsome. He was an absolute A-plus student. He excelled in sport. He had many girlfriends. And he was very popular. He was like literally the golden child, you know. And we had actually just crossed over that horrible fighty stage and had actually become really good friends. And, you know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it was kind of a really bad blow. And of course, for my parents, I mean, you know, my parents were devastated.
Mm, yeah. Did you always want to be a writer?
I think so, Brendan. And I can't actually say that I ever said to myself, oh, I'm going to be a writer. But because I read so much, I was such a voracious reader. And I think most writers would start off as having been voracious readers.
And you, there's another part of your life that comes through, and actually my own family have been affected by it. You were very young. You had a stroke at 47.
Yeah. And I'm as I was saying to Susan, you know, I'm evangelical about, spreading the word about, undetected high blood pressure that you can go through. And then, you know, I was so lucky I survived the stroke. And, you know, I kind of did a whole lot of things after my stroke that I would never have been considered doing. But I think...
So it was a few years ago, obviously.
Yeah.
It came out of absolutely, as strokes do, completely out of the blue.
Out of the blue, yeah.
And you were relatively young, really.
Yeah. And, you know, like, no, completely asymptomatic and, married to a vascular surgeon whose specialty is dealing with people who have strokes.
What did you do after the stroke? What were the new things you did? Sorry, and you're married to a vascular surgeon.
Yeah.
That's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's freaky, isn't it?
Yeah.
What are the stuff that I did after I had the stroke?
Did you do like bucket list stuff, or did you adjust your health, or what did you?
Well, I mean, both. You know, I mean, I turned around my health. I still say it was my lucky stroke because it didn't kill me, but it didn't kill me, but it actually made me turn my life around, my whole, outlook on my weight and healthy eating and eating less salt. Walking. So that was one aspect of it. And the other thing is that, you know, I walked the Camino.
Did you?
We went to Everest Base Camp. Wow. I started playing golf. And I started saying yes to any opportunity that came my way. Like, I don't ever say no to anything. I just go with it because God knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
So did it make you just like just no barriers, just go for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I can actually, now reading the book, I can really feel your presence now and why you've gotten to this point. So let's talk about the book, The Inheritance, great name, and resonates very strongly in many Irish families.
And with Indian families as well, though this is a completely Irish book, as you know, you're reading it. So
tell people what it's about and what they can expect.
Okay, so The Inheritance is set in West Cork on the Berra Peninsula.
Map of it inside the book, by the way. I haven't done many of those towns. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And it's set specifically in Glengariff. Mm-hmm. And it's about a young man of London Irish heritage who inherits a small cottage in Glengariff. And he comes from London to Ireland at a time when all young men are leaving Ireland. And it's what happens to him when he inherits this cottage. But there's also a thread from 400 years ago, the story of O'Sullivan Berra and what happened to him and his kinspeople in the forest for 400 years ago in Glengariff Forest.
Which that kind of blew my mind as well. So the book starts in April 1986 as Marlow arrives, having just found out, and this is a really interesting thing that you tapped into. And I actually have interviewed a number of women of a certain vintage as part of a podcast. And the story is so common in our culture. He has just found out in the 80s that his sister is actually his mother.
That's right.
And I've interviewed six women who are over 60, and every single one of them have that story in their family.
Yeah.
It's a very common story that I think we're really only talking about now. So how did you put that? Where did that idea come from to put that in the story?
Well, if I tell you this now, you're not going to believe it. It literally just appeared on the page. I mean, I was looking for a great starting line. I just wanted a good opening line. And I wrote that line. You know, he found out that his sister was his mother. And of course, then I had to sort of say, oh my God, now I have to write this man's backstory. You know? So, but I think a lot of those kind of, a lot of that kind of stuff, when that happens, it's because, you know, you have actually sort of absorbed it by osmosis, you know,
So you must have heard those stories a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the social history of the country you absorb. I mean, I've been here for 38 years now, and, you know, I've absorbed so much of Irish social history.
I can imagine you're in quite an open demeanor. I can imagine the 80s and 90s in Sligo, people told you a lot of stuff.
yeah, and that's true. And I think, like most writers, you know, I'd be hyper observant, and I'd always be listening and asking questions and stuff like that. So, and of course, you know, just listening to radio and TV, like when we moved to Ireland, you know, I got all my information about Ireland from listening to Gay Byrne.
Yeah, so did we all.
Yeah. And, you know, whether you liked him or not.
Yeah, but, he was amazing.
You did learn about the country, you
this
know.
This was his seat, would you believe? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
This is where goodness, wow.
Amazing, yeah. I'm a huge fan as well.
Oh, my hair's standing on
his head. Yeah. But, yeah, it was, you know, as we say, there was no sex in Ireland before Gay Byrne. Before he started talking about it.
Yeah,
but did you realise that story, that social history about young mothers who fled and then the child would be, I suppose, without any legal adoption papers, taken in by the grandmother, and we just glossed over. Did you realise how common that was in our culture? And is it common in India?
No, Jesus, no, not at all.
No.
No, not at all, no.
Did you realise how common it was here when you were writing about it?
I'd say I realised in the last 10 years, because I actually know three or four people myself.
Yeah, me too. It's wild.
Who were in that situation, so, or who had found out that their sisters were actually their mothers.
Yeah.
But I think, and all the people, the four people I know, actually had a happy outcome.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a huge swathe of people who were very fortunate to have had a happy outcome. And, you know.
Well, in the book, what you read is it's a mother and a daughter protecting, keeping the child within the family, not letting society take the child away, which is what would have happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And we know those stories.
Yeah.
I really want to ask about you weaving in O'Sullivan Berra, which is obviously what the Berra Peninsula is called. Mm. Why was it important for you to weave that history in, and how relevant is that to the story?
Yeah, so I mean, having walked so much around Glengariff and in Glengariff Forest, You know, when I found out about the O'Sullivan Barrow story shortly after we had a home there.
And give the listeners a little potted history of the O'Sullivan Barrow story.
Yeah. So O'Sullivan Barrow was one of the last chiefs in Ireland to hold out against the English, you know. And when his...
We're talking 17th century, right?
Yeah. 1601, 1602 was when he was finally cornered in Barrow. And... After a particularly huge loss of Dunboy Castle in Castletown Bear, he and all his followers sort of gathered and fell back into the very, very dense and ancient forest of in Glengariff. And he managed to hide there for 6 months. And though the English were literally only a few miles away, the forest was so dense they were able to hide. But he actually lost his entire cattle on one night on the 31st of December 1602, and he then decided within a few hours to march to Leitrim, where he knew the O'Rourkes would give him shelter. And so about between 1300 and 1400 people left on that one night, one of the coldest winters ever recorded in Irish history. And they fled it took them 16 days to walk, which is just incredible, an incredible achievement. And only 35 arrived alive.
Oh, wow.
You know, and when I started talking to people about it, I kind of realized very few people in Ireland actually know that story. Mm-hmm. You know, they might have just vaguely heard about him, but very few people know the exact story. And of course, now, you know, on the 400th, when the 400th anniversary of that walk was celebrated by recreating it, you know, O'Sullivan people came from all over the world and they walked that route. And now it's one of the most popular marked walks in Europe. It's called the Barra Breffni Way.
Brilliant.
And it's an amazing story.
Was the story connected to the inheritance in that it was sort of hiding in plain sight?
Yeah. You're right. I mean, I never thought of
yes,
it that
got
way.
It.
That's
yeah.
exactly what it is.
That's exactly
yeah,
what I got
yeah,
from
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful read. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I would absolutely recommend it. It's by Hope Road Publishing, available in all good bookshops. It's called The Inheritance. Covery, it was absolutely gorgeous to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And the very
thanks,
best of luck. And thanks for coming in. Let's